Well, hi everyone, and welcome to the Modern Cotton Story, sponsored by E3 Sustainable Cotton. I'm Jennifer Crumpler, Fiber Development Manager and Manager of the E3 Sustainable Cotton Program from BASF and host of today's program. Well, today we are very excited to kick off a new podcast series entitled Talking Textiles. This will be an exciting series as we get to interview some of the top management, top people, top voices from within the textile mills around the world. And we're going to discuss, the different market, current markets, what's happening with different types of products, sustainability, the use of cotton. As the listeners know, for me, I always learn something new every time I talk to someone in this space and, really bringing the whole supply chain together and just really the complexities of how it all comes together. And makes and get things done. So again, joined by industry consultant Bob Antoshak. So, Bob, everything, you guys staying busy over in Tennessee today?
Yes, it's actually cold here in Tennessee today, but a nice day, and I look forward because it's Friday. I look forward to getting out on my bike later today and take advantage of some really nice weather and brisk air,
Nice,
Jennifer.
nice.
So,
Well, luckily, we had a little bit of a cold spell here, but luckily it kind of went away. And so this morning I got out and was going to do my normal 5 a.m. workout. And I walked out and I was like, wait a second, I do not need a fleece and a toboggan and another layer and layer. I was like, where? Summer is still in the South. So, well, awesome. Well, today I have the pleasure to introduce, today's guest, Mark X, the well-known and respected director of North American marketing at Advanced Denim. So, Mark, thanks so much for joining us today. And, many of our listeners before we started recording, Mark and I were talking. We don't live far from each other, and we have the pleasure of playing along some of the same tennis and tennis people and tennis teams with each other. So we got to chat tennis today. So, Mark, how's everything going with you?
Fantastic, Jennifer, and thanks for having me on the podcast. Really, I'd have to say I'm a huge fan of the podcast and listen to it every week and seriously enjoy the differing point of views, substantive information, and of course, the weather. That's always
Yeah,
yeah,
it's
well,
always
that's
something
right.
you never know,
We always talk weather. We always talk
Yeah, we
weather.
always talk
That's
weather,
right.
and I'm sure you can know that in the question Bob's going to ask. So there's just a few things we'd like to keep
That's right.
consistent along the way. Well, that's good, and Mark, I will tell you, flattery will get you everywhere. So we'll make sure
There.
we have you sound good in the podcast.
Fantastic.
Well, yeah. Well, Mark, we all know you've had a very accomplished career in the textile industry and come from a very famous textile family. And you and I first met, and I think Bob really kind of introduced us. He, really kind of told me that you literally grew up with textiles and in it. You're really an expert in global textiles, garment industries, particularly around denim. And, we're going to get into some questions soon about the market and, what things are happening, some of that stuff you're seeing. But before we do that, I would love to, have you tell our listeners a little bit about your background so they can learn more about you. And then, love to have you introduce Advanced Denim, the company, to our listeners so that may not be as familiar with it.
Well, fantastic. My family has been in the textile business for close to 200 years. In 1895, my great grandfather came over from Germany with a set of looms. So he was the loom technician that came on the boat with all the looms and installed them in the Sydney Blumenthal Company in Shelton, Connecticut. And liked it so much in the United States, they decided to stay, became the plant manager of the Sydney Blumenthal Company, and then started a company called Frank Ickx and Sons. And Frank Ickx and Sons started in 1919 and ended, I guess, in 1999. So I literally grew up in the textile business, grew up as a kid going to mills in Charlottesville, Virginia, Lexington, North Carolina, Lincolnton, North Carolina, and Ireland as well. We had manufacturing over there. So it was actually something that I saw as what I wanted to do when I grow up, where I wanted to be. I wanted to walk through weave rooms. I wanted to feel that change of pressure as you open the doors into those giant rooms with those with looms everywhere. So yeah, it was an exciting childhood. When I graduated from college, my father gave me the opportunity to work down in Lexington, North Carolina, and go to NC State for a year and learn textile engineering. And so I did that. I learned weaving on drapers and Sauer Diedrich rapiers. And then actually, Jennifer, I'm sorry, I decided not to stay in the South.
I know, right? What were you thinking? Man.
I'm from outside of New York, but as I have a fear of missing out, I went back to the city and actually took a left turn and went into denim and started working for companies like Graniteville and Avondale and met a lot of great people. And that's, you know, it was that link between working in the mill and marketing out of New York that I really grew to appreciate the expertise that the U.S. mill business had inside the plant, inside the mill, and learned so much from, you know, people at Graniteville, the Phil Getzes of the world, and, you know, that really loved denim, and I grew to love denim as well. You know, then in 1998, got the opportunity to work for Yuko Fabrics, which was based in Rockingham, North Carolina. And what Yuko did is they purchased a plant from Fruit of the Loom. And we commercialized stretch denim in the U.S. down in North Carolina. So not saying that other people didn't do stretch denim, but that wasn't their focus back then. And so we focused on stretch and kind of grew the stretch denim business and basically helped fuel the premium denim business of that time. And so it was an exciting time for sure.
So, yeah, I guess that what I've learned, you know, Mark, and I didn't mean to interrupt you, it seems like once the denim bug bites you, though, it really just stays, you kind of stay with denim. I mean, and that's been, a learning thing for me is just kind of going in the industry, learning the textile space, learning the different markets and things. And, you know, that denim bug, when it bites, and like you said, it bit you and loved doing it, it just kind of bites hard.
it's not just the, you know, the product is almost a living product, you know, it has so many changes in it and so many different levels. And again, you're dealing with, you know, the expertise in the mill and dyeing and finishing. And then you're dealing with designers who are creating products that almost come to life in front of you. So it's the whole supply chain in denim that is truly interesting. And you know, my family's business was synthetic gray goods. Not much exciting there, you know.
I was going to say that's a little different. Yeah.
So it really gets you into the fashion side of the business, denim, into the technical side, into the innovative side. It's really, truly exciting.
How about Advance?
Advance denim, you know, so after we shut down Yuko Fabrics in I think 2009, 2010, you know, I started to work for people in China, and most recently Advanced Denim. Advanced Denim is the oldest denim mill in China. So it was the first denim mill to be incorporated in China. And it is phenomenal mill, really, really great. Bases its foundation around innovation, quality, service, and people. And if you go over in there and visit the plant, it truly practices what it preaches. It is one of the best capitalized facilities I've ever been in, one of the cleanest, one of the most sustainable, but it's all driven by innovation and the innovator around its managing director, Amy Wang. And it really, really is a phenomenal facility. And it's, you know, I've been lucky throughout my career to have people around me that are much smarter than me and that really are innovators and teachers and love their business. And Amy Wang is just the latest of the group of people that I'm lucky to be close to.
You know, Mark, I have to say, I feel lucky to have met you. You have taught me a lot about textiles. Years back, I'm pretty sure I met your dad a number of times in D.C. With the association racket, you know, when that was all running full speed. And I think you and I met in New York, probably at Ola at the time.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And but again, it's been just for me a real pleasure to get to know you, learn from you. Your experience is so deep in the trade, and it's really besides that, you're a nice guy. So
well, that means a lot right there.
Yeah, right there. You know,
well, like, one of the best things about Bob Anderschak is you can call him up on the phone and talk for an hour about cotton and what's going on in the market, and just constantly learn, you know. And if you're not constantly learning in this ever-changing business or seeking out the smart people to learn from, then you're just falling behind. So,
well, you're very kind, Mark. but listen, speaking of which, what are some of the key factors that you see affecting the markets these days for textiles?
Well, gosh, textiles. I mean, that's
right. It's a big question. Yeah,
that's a big question. You know, it's there are a lot of things out there that are both frustrating and inspiring all at the same time. You know, you've got if you look at it from, you know, take a couple steps back, it really is an amazing time for, let's just center on the denim business, because the changes and the innovation to actually change centuries old practices of how you dye denim, how you finish a product, it's all changed 3 to 4 years, you know, and that is the drive to clean up the factory, to be more sustainable, to create a product that's cleaner and better for the environment. And that's exciting. And also not just have a 13 to 14 ounce, you know, rigid denim, you know, create product with different performance attitudes. So it's really one of the best times to be in the business, product development wise. I don't think there was a time in my career that geopolitics or using textiles as a bargaining chip throughout the world hasn't been an issue. You know, it's constantly issue. And that is a frustrating challenge. And I'd have to say a couple podcasts back, you guys had the author of Unraveled on.
Mm-hmm.
And phenomenal book, really goes into detail on all those frustrations, on all those issues. And in some senses, a lot of these books kind of skirt over it and don't give you the real story. I think she did a phenomenal job at,
she really did.
At really expressing where the industry is right now.
Yeah, she did. And I think that was definitely, you know, favorite podcast, and, you know, I've listened to the book. It was a great eye opening, you know, for a lot of it, and really understand what it was, what's happening, where we're going to. So I agree with you so much on that, Mark, that was a great book to kind of tell what's happening and then how things are, you know, happening and what's going on. But, you know, it seems that there, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, and you even mentioned that you've had the opportunity to work globally with a lot of different companies and a lot of different places. You know, we, you know, looking at and seeing how things really in textile really do operate in that global space. But really, you know, would like to see, looking at global trade of textile and apparel, how do we see that evolving over the next few years? And what do you see as some of the main factors affecting sourcing decisions? Do you see sustainability and traceability being more important? You know, just kind of from what you're seeing out in the industry.
Yeah, you know, I think the global trade in textiles is always moving. You know, it's always shifting. It's always going to basically emerging countries that have lower wage opportunities to create a better, you know, a better value, let's say, for the brands. But I think right now you're also seeing this growth and sustainability and changing the way we do things that might temper that movement a little bit, slow it down just a little bit. And, you know, one thing in advanced denim that we're doing is we are literally investing in machinery that changes the way that denim is made. You know, taking dyeing from, you know, 8 to 13 boxes down to one box with a 95% water savings is basically changing the way you're producing denim and investing. So that's not an easy thing to do. That's a very capital intensive operation, and creating something you can't just shift to another country very easily.
Yeah. And that's one thing, Mark, you mentioned the equipment. That's something too. That equipment is not cheap. Sometimes fad and, you know, trends change, and it's always interesting to see what the latest designer or what the latest thing's going to be. But, you know, some of these processes you mentioned earlier, they've been in place for centuries, that. And it's something that is not overnight, because that capital investment and the equipment and that is not a cheap process either.
Yes. And it's, our brand partners really want us to embrace sustainability, want us to make these kind of changes on one hand, but on the other hand, then they want, you know, us to compete with people that haven't made those changes and invested. So it's really a tough tightrope that we walk always. And basically Advanced Denim has said, well, you know, we're going to stick by our core beliefs of being the best in the world, of being the most sustainable, of looking for the future of denim and the future of fabrics. I mean, we're scouring the world for the next, you know, basic innovations in both fiber and finishing and everything. All of our last innovation, blue denim, came from the US. Mm-hmm. You know? So at 3 years of creating a denim that doesn't use sodium hydrosulfite to put the indigo into reduction. So, you know, that's 3 years working with companies in the US to create a innovation for a mill in China. So it's never ending innovating. And you know, you guys are on the cotton side, which is, you know, that's a very interesting landscape right now as well. I mean, it is.
I know we had someone, I think it was OA or someone on one of the economists on the call. And I think everything that's happened in the past year and a half, you know, we had COVID, we had things shutting down on top of all that. Then let's go block the Suez Canal and let's go do all this. Let's just add a little bit of complex. I think, you know, it's been some interesting things happening in the cotton space. That maybe it was kind of quiet for a while, but now all of a sudden it's like everything happened at one time. So it's not going to stop.
I think the appetite for traceability, sustainability, is only going to get larger. I think the technology that's going into that space is only going to get more interesting. I think with blockchain traceability or even genetic tagging of where cotton comes from. Mm-hmm. I mean, Jennifer, you and I know that we'd love to talk to a cotton trader, and the cotton trader just wants to get everything out of their warehouse.
Yeah.
You know, they want to clear the warehouse the way they've been doing it. But just like we have to change the way we make denim, the cotton space is going to have to change the way they market and sell the cotton, because the customer is going to want individuality throughout the supply chain.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And that's the one thing, you know, at E3, we've met some resistance, but we are different in that space, and that we are a higher standard. We do require every, you know, Bell ID back to individual field, so we can give data metrics. You know, we give data. We believe in data. We believe in sharing data to tell a true and honest story, you know, not to just put something on a label or to claim something, but, you know, hey, if you do claim it, where did you get that claim from? How are you sure that came from there? And you're right, Mark, it's, there is some resistance in the cotton space, but I think that's where we're pushing as hard as we can to kind of lead and say, well, you know, it can be done, and this is how we can do it to meet that customer need as well.
Yeah, I think it's pretty exciting. I think the first time I've ever really delved into kind of the specialization of cotton was at a dinner in Amsterdam with Bob Anderschak and some people from the Kingpins group. and a couple cotton farmers. And I sat next to a cotton farmer, and he just explained to me everything. And I was like, wow, okay, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, clear as mud, right? It's like trying to unscramble scrambled eggs.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much.
Yeah, it really is.
And no, it continues to get more interesting. You know, even though we study this on a daily basis now, if you step back, you're like, okay, what is the most sustainable cotton out there? There's still, you know, five different answers.
Well, it is. And no one, and that's it's really interesting because everybody wants to kind of work. And it's really to think, hey, yep, here's the silo in this area. Here's this. And, you know, and that's where I keep going back to, well, where's the data? You know, what is that standard data? What is it going to look like? You know, what does sustainable mean? What does it mean we say that word? What does this mean? How do you measure this? You know, how do you measure cotton consistently in around the world that experiences every kind of different growing condition? Now you can have cotton planted across the street from each other, and it can have, maybe this one got rain and that one didn't. So you're going to have to use, you know, this one will require more irrigated water versus not. And I think that's where some of the struggle comes in is, okay, what is some of that standardization of what these, you know, definitions mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. And then on top of it, we have what, 15 different cotton sustainability standards globally. I mean, yeah, well, everyone's different. So, you know, it's just really kind of crazy. Mark, besides talking weather, we usually do on this podcast, typically I'll ask a question about COVID pandemic and its impact on the business. I think we've all seen a lot of change in the business. What's your take on that? What kind of things have you seen? I mean, it's, a lot of it's pretty deep. Some of it's, you know, stuff that was changing before, but
Absolutely. I mean, listen, it changed. You know, my job went from being one of the most social jobs out there, where you're seeing people in Los Angeles or Columbus or Seattle or Dallas on a weekly basis, to being a lonely guy in an office doing a lot of Zoom calls. And that's just opening up, which is exciting. But I think one of the key things this is doing to my space, to the textile selling space and to fashion, is it's kind of knocking down the seasons. We had a very regimented schedule. You know, we're going to be here on this month. We're going to be doing fall here. We're going to be doing spring there. Now that purchasing and consumerism is more online, and it's more an emotional purchase. So suddenly the big brands have to adjust for that, and that adjusts back to me, you know, where it's less of a regimented calendar schedule. And right now we're seeing, you know, business is pretty good because that shift to online sales has been pushed up, and we're seeing that that's being very successful. But now you're seeing the shift of product away from, you know, a softer, I'm in sweatpants or just wearing a top and a Zoom, to people saying, I'm sick of that and I'm going to make an emotional purchase. And it might be something wild and something crazy, and may have a lot of sequins on it, but I'm going to take my stimulus check and I'm going to do this, and it's going to be at my house in a day, you know? So it's, I think the change is pretty exciting. But, you know, it's going to really have ramifications throughout the whole supply chain.
So some will thrive in that environment and some won't.
Yeah. You have to be flexible. You have to understand your customer more, from my point of view, and understand what they're doing. If they're going from a brick and mortar business down to a direct to consumer business, then you've got to understand where their seasonless purchases are. I think a lot of my customers right now, based on supply chain issues, which is a whole, you know, a whole nother story. That's all.
Sure.
Two podcasts on that.
Right.
You know, based on that, they're not changing. They're almost, you know, locked up. You know, they're, oh, we'll just stick with what's in the store right now, and we'll kick the can down the road and kind of make the decision on how to change things going forward. So
that's interesting. And you know, along those lines, have you, Mark, I think one of the questions I have for you and your time being textiles, you know, growing up in textiles, being in it many years, when you look back, I know COVID has shown a lot of different changes and things, but you look at your career, what would you say was really, you know, kind of the most revolutionizing or the biggest kind of change, the biggest thing that really through your career that you went through that shaped some of your thoughts on the supply chain? Was it, you know, going to more of the seasonal? Was it staying, you know, what we're going through now? Like, what were some of those things that maybe helped you be like, okay, yep, develop that passion for the space?
Well, the passion for the space kind of, you know, was how I grew up, you know,
yeah.
But, and, you know, one of the things that this whole, the textile space, and I've had opportunities over the years to go into other, lines of business. People's like, oh, come work with me here or there. And I said, no, I love what I'm doing. The mm-hmm. travel, the exposure to the world. I've been in more countries than I can name. And the fact that you're seeing everything from a different lens, it's great. I think the changes over the years are constant. It's constantly changing, constantly shifting. There are constant challenges. And, you know, it's not just fashion challenges or performance of product, but it's, you know, geopolitical issues and sourcing challenges as well. You know, I mean, right now we're in a huge challenge just on yet another spike in cotton, which mm-hmm. Which creates a whole nother level of craziness. You know, you're
talking about angst.
I mean, it is, you know, we went through this in what, 2010, mm-hmm. where it hit $2. And that, I think that had a little bit more of a supply and demand issue to it. But now you're dealing with a lot of speculation. You're dealing with a lot of unknowns. You're dealing with, you know, something that shouldn't be spiking right now. And you've got to deal with your customers on it. I mean, it's a one-to-one thing. We get an increase in cotton prices. The prices have to rise in a industry that does not like rising prices.
Yeah. And so, you know, when you throw into that, you know, the grower is everyone's thinking, okay, yeah, well, that grower's doing good with this price raise. Well, not really, because all of his input cost has increased, you know, his equipment costs, his labor costs, his, you know, any input for the cotton, the seed, everything that goes into it. All of that is, you know, that cost has increased. And then you throw in, I was in Arizona not long ago, and then I was over in Memphis and Wilkes in Arkansas and some other places talking to some growers. And then you throw in, if a piece of equipment breaks down or something happening, harvest is rolling wide open right now and you can't get a part for a piece of equipment. So they're stuck. I mean, it's really been that whole piece of it. It is. It's everybody's kind of that domino effect starting at the very beginning, and it's definitely being felt by downstream. But then just like you said, in an industry, I don't think it's just textile. I think it's every part in the supply chain of cotton. Nobody likes that price increase of it at all. Cause I can promise you, I haven't found one farmer who's been happy when we come to him with a price increase.
It's a challenge for sure. And
it is,
you know, people think that we negotiate our prices on cotton, you know, email. Your price from the spinner is going up tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's tomorrow. And mm-hmm. so, you know, I think we're holding prices right now, which, you know, is unheard of. We're holding prices for like a day, 2 days.
Wow.
You know, that's it. And then we've got to renegotiate or relook at what our costs are. And it's not just cotton. You know, indigo dye stuff is up 80%.
Wow.
Boy, that's a hit.
I mean, that's a hit on top of that. You know, I know cotton is the biggest piece and whatever one wants to talk about, but just like Jennifer said, all the other inputs are increasing dramatically. Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the equipment you mentioned earlier, and then if something of that, I mean, I'm not sure what lead time for you guys on getting a part to repair, you know, with the looms or repair any of the equipment, but that is almost non-existent right now. You can't get the parts. And we know, and along those lines, Mark, how do you see with all this, and you talked, we talked about it some earlier, but how do you see the industry as a whole coping with maybe what's happening? Because, you know, we talk about, you talk about, you know, rising cotton prices, transportation prices. We all know what's happening at the ports. You know, you can pull up and see every, you know, clogged up at the port. We actually recently were getting something because we were building the building a house on top of all this, trying to get something brought in. And you know, our vendor told us, like, well, they would typically come into the port in LA. We've actually had to reroute them to another port down in another part of the country. Just everything's been clogged up there. And then, you know, there is tons of tension between different governments, various countries with trade, other things happening. So what do you think, how do you, with all this happening, what do you, how do you see the industry coping?
You know, I think the industry copes as it has for hundreds of years, you know, I mean, they innovate, change. They try to, I think this supply chain issue is not going to be an easy solve. It's amazing what a disruption happened because of COVID, because of where containers are and the unforeseen, you know, need for product, you know, once that chain is broken. So it's just going to take some time to smooth out. And these high prices and inflation, I don't think is going away, you know, it really isn't. So, and I think you also have a consumer now that is not as interested in fast fashion, cheap, cheap, cheap. Mm-hmm. You know, I see a younger generation that is not purchasing as much, but purchasing more quality, or going the other way and not even purchasing new. And you know, my daughter's college age and just out of college, you know, prefer to go vintage shopping.
Yeah.
You know? And of course, I buy them new jeans just to, you know, try to complete the circle of life.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, come on now, we gotta help Dad. Yeah.
Support the cause.
Yes. Well, you know, that's so true. And I think, Mark, what you just said, it is exactly what, you know, the series we did with a lot of those on the universities and other levels coming in and talking about what they're seeing with the new generation coming out and the new consumers and new buying habits. It's exactly that. Their habits and their buying habits are based on a cause, or based on the story behind the brand, or that, you know, what that piece is, the doing good piece versus the fast fashion. Right. So I think you're exactly right. It's more of the feel around the buy than, you know, maybe just having that, just having a tangible piece there.
Yeah. And you see brands that are actually changing their image, changing their whole marketing and product, and it's seeing instant results. You know, and getting a better product, putting a more sustainable product in the store, something that is a more solid product that lasts and is quality, and they're seeing the results that their volumes are going up. So, and their business is increasing. So it's an exciting time in that sense.
Yeah, absolutely. You're exactly right. Well, Mark, I think I could have a ton more questions to ask you, and I'm sure Bob could too. But I think we are about out of time. But again, I appreciate you joining us today on the show and for the discussion and kind of walking us through, you know, especially how you guys in Advance are really adapting and coping and navigating what's happening. Should we have any of our listeners that would want to reach out with you, reach out to you, or to learn more about Advance Denim, what is the best way for them to do that?
They can just email me at Mark X, so that's MARKIX at advancedenim.com. Or they can give me a call, 910-417-0889.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate that so much, Mark. And again, thank you for being on. And I'd also like to thank you, our listeners, for joining us. And we really hope that you enjoyed the show. Should you have any questions about the E3 Sustainable Cotton Program, email me at e3cotton@basf.com. Also, please visit us on Instagram and Facebook at E3 Sustainable Cotton. Thanks so much and see you next time.